Well, summer is gone, unfortunately, but a nice fall is in the offing, and that includes a lead up toward Breeders' Cup. We've got kind of a quiet week because California and New York both going to pause here, and I think we all are quite relieved in some ways to get a bit of a breather. And for Jay Privman, of course, the home game comes to an end. Me too. You know, it's, you know, about equidistant from Saratoga for me as Del Mar is for Jay. And he joins us, and of course, post-Derby as well as post-Del Mar. Jay, good morning.
Steve, good morning. Happy end of summer.
It is, and actually, we're at least here at Saratoga, we're expecting, you know, the high 80s actually. So we're going to at least get you know, a little bit of a lingering summer, Indian summer. Although I don't know if you can call it Indian summer anymore.
I don't know.
Jay, let's talk before we do Del Mar. Let's get the Derby postscript and the weekend, and of course Marty and Nicole Russo on site, and everybody else working remotely, but you wouldn't know it from all the terrific coverage.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I thought, you know, Marty and Nicole, I thought, did just a tremendous job under, you know, the difficult circumstances that were necessarily put in order to have the race this year. The lack of access and things like that, but I thought the quality of the coverage was terrific all week long from both of them on site. And then, you know, there were some advances and recaps that were done by myself and Marcus on some of the undercard races from afar. So we were able to hopefully provide as good a package as we could under the circumstances for our readers.
Well, and Jay, let's start with the Derby, and then we can, you know, we can fit in some other things. And I said yesterday, Nick Tamaro and I were talking, and it just seemed like there were really three logical, overwhelmingly logical potential outcomes. And one of them was that Authentic was able to clear and be comfortable and wire them. And I'm kind of amazed at the shock that some people seem to come away with for what was really a fairly logical potentiality.
Well, you know, as you know, I love the horse. I'd been telling you for months how much I thought Authentic would get the mile and a no.
you
know, yeah, there were several things I think that happened in the last week or so or 2 weeks that helped the outcome of this race. I don't think the defections of Art Collector and King Guillermo can be overstated. Those were potential pace pressing type horses, and their defection certainly I think impacted the way the early part of the race was run. There's also the possibility now, based on a two-race sample size, that Tis the Law is not quite as good at Churchill Downs as he is at other tracks. And this is all obviously Monday morning quarterbacking now, or I guess in this case Tuesday morning quarterbacking. And then there's, you know, Authentic perhaps being a more mature horse than he would have been in May. You know, if the Derby had been run on its original date, he wouldn't have been actually 3 years old yet. So he had time to grow up physically. But, you know, the one thing I had said on a show last week that gave me pause about my longtime circumspection over this horse being able to get the beyond a mile and an eighth was the aggressive way in which you had been trained leading up to the race. In the space of 17 days, you had workouts of six furlongs, a mile, and then the last one officially was six furlongs, but it was seven, and all of the works included extensive gallop outs. So, I mean, he was trained so aggressively and was so fit for that race, and I think it showed. on Saturday. So you combine that, you get a little bit. It's not always just sort of one reason why something happened in a race, I don't think. So you take that, the pace, maybe Tisdalaw coming back on 4 weeks, and or being at a track he's not quite as effective at, and he's not the first horse who's not been as effective multiple times at Churchill Downs as he was elsewhere, probably the most notable one being Easy Goer. Add all that up, and it might have made the difference between victory and defeat for Tisdalaw vis-a-vis Authentic. I watched all of Authentic's works. I was super impressed with how he'd been training. I just had it in my mind that he wasn't going to be able to be as effective beyond a mile and an eighth, but he was, and I think the those couple pace horses coming out helped him. But I was, too stubborn to want to reevaluate more significantly than I did. I was concerned that he might be able to run better owing to that, but I still couldn't pull the trigger on boosting him in my evaluation. And so, another wrong Derby opinion this year.
Well, as we also appreciate when it comes to this race, there's tidbits and nuggets when it comes to building tickets. And one of the things that you did say Friday that I know some people capitalized on, because I heard from them, was giving Mr. Big News some appreciation for exactly what he was able to do, which was rally into the numbers and significantly boost, considering that the top three favorites finished 2-1-4. Getting Mr. Big News into your tries and supers and super high five if you play it was instrumental. So
yeah, any of those people who want to send a little percentage, I'm
a tip.
Very appreciative, because I was too much of a dope to, have thrown in Authentic into the win spot when building my tickets. And, if I had, I'd have had the super. It was just really an aggravating result, because I did think, as like I said on your show and on the stuff I did on the DRF website with Marty, I thought he was a really live horse for gimmicks. He had had a compromised trip in the Bluegrass and thought he'd be running late, and he certainly outran his odds. So I was glad I had at least one good opinion. Unfortunately, there weren't enough for me in the race to have made a score, which, if I'd have not been so stubborn about Authentic's aptitude beyond a mile and an eighth, that super for me was very, very havable with the other horses that were in there. So it was a pretty aggravating result to not have that super, having had the opinion of Mr. Big News.
Well, and that's the challenge in here, because there's so many parts of the evaluation process, and the way in which Authentic finished in the Haskell, and even if you weigh in the stamina building style aggressive drills, and as good as he looked, and he did look physically when he arrived to town, and we had those two lousy mornings of weather, which made it a little bit more difficult to see the horses galloping in earnest. Nobody, except maybe Lanny would have drilled hard over those tracks on Wednesday and Thursday. So that made it a little bit difficult to appreciate how well he was coming in. Jay, how much of the Travers dialogue should we have, in terms of how much the mile and a quarter could have either maybe dulled him a little bit or taken just that much out of him? I mean, he ran a terrific race. It's not like he came in and stunk it up. He just couldn't get to the winner.
I mean, no, those are fair points. I mean, I don't know if it's so much as running in the Travers as it was just it was a 4-week turnaround, and he'd never been in that position before. But like going back to the thing I said earlier, you know, the only other time he lost in his career was at Churchill Downs, and yeah, it was a different circumstance. It was under the lights, it was an off track, but. You know, just maybe he's not quite as good there. You know, it's easy to say now after watching the race on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure they're very happy. They probably don't need to go and run there again. You know, and he ran a good race. I mean, he beat everybody but one, but he had his shot at the top of the stretch. I mean, he, you know, when they got to the quarter pole, I thought he was going to win, and he just couldn't go by. And you know, they didn't come home particularly fast. It was just that it was just that Authentic was slowing down at a, you know, not he wasn't slowing down as quickly as everybody else was slowing down, and so he outlasted everybody. And that's, you know, it was a fast early kind of slow late race, and he, and that to me, with Tiz de Waal, that would sort of maybe play into that maybe he was a little bit dulled from the previous race, you know, that he didn't have the same kind of punch, but he ran. Look, if you know, if Authentic doesn't hold him off, then Tiz de Waal wins the Derby. So he ran a good race, just not as good as I think he ran in the Travers or maybe even the Belmont.
I do want to again. I did it yesterday. I gave the numbers twice. I tweeted it on Sunday and then had a comment about it, comparing it to War Emblem's Derby. Which we'll get back to as well. But here are the quarters. 22-4, then slow down to 23-3, then slow down further to 23-4, slow down a full second in the fourth quarter, 24-4, and then the 25-3 final quarter. So Authentic, the opening half in 46-2, the final half in 50-2. The opening three quarters in 110-1. The last three quarters in 114-1. I'm real curious, Jay. Tell me, because the internet says that the horse, quote unquote, rebroke. Tell me where he rebroke as he was coming home that slowly.
Yeah, that would be. Not in line with a horse who ran fast. Usually you would assume that word to be used with horses that are running faster at the end of the race. So I would not, that would not be a word I would use to describe him. To me, it would be more that, you know, he hung on in a race. Like I was just saying a few moments ago, he wasn't slowing down as quickly as everybody else was slowing down at the end of that race. And he was able to, last. So, you know, like I said, I didn't, you know, I'd for months thought he wouldn't be able to be as effective beyond a mile and an eighth. Perhaps the postponement of the Derby, like I said, the pace situation, Tiz de Waal not being quite as effective or maybe being a little dulled, and a horse who was trained, you know, like I said, in 17 days, the amount of work that horse had before he left Del Mar was awfully impressive. So get a little bit from here and a little bit from there, and you put it together, and those elements, I think, made the difference on Saturday.
Jay, address what had to be a disappointment for the CRK team and Honor AP, who started sluggishly and, you know, eventually started to, you know, make a rally and arrived late on the scene. But, you know, given a 46-2 half and, you know, the expectation that a mile and a quarter was going to be to his advantage, and it was the, you know, a trip that he was going to excel at, he really needed to be at least more forward early than he was. Some thoughts about what happened with him.
Yeah, you're right. Like you mentioned, I think you made two points that are both accurate. He didn't get off that well, and he was, you know, so that he was sluggish, and he was sluggish early, and he needed to be closer, and he wasn't closer because he didn't break, and I think he got either interfered with or intimidated by horses drifting out in front of him right when they left the gate. And then he just seemed to kind of, I mean, he's got a big, long stride, but he just seemed to sort of be loping back there when that first quarter mile or so as they came through the stretch. He just didn't get into the race, but that's him. I mean, he's a big, long, striding horse. And let's face it, the early pace was quick. I mean, they ran away from him. Mm-hmm. But he needed to be closer, and he wasn't. I know it's always, in races like this, the knee-jerk reaction is to blame the jockey, but I don't think Mike Smith did anything wrong or did anything that he could have prevented, let's put it that way. The horse didn't break alertly. He kind of hesitated, and then he got checked or bothered a little bit there just in that first stride, and then he just sort of was loping back there, and the horse just was not... He just wasn't into the race like you would have wanted to see that first eighth or quarter mile. And he ran fine after that. I saw some data that Marshall Graham had posted yesterday, that he gleaned off of Trackus that showed ground loss and things of that nature. And it showed that, Honor AP had run a very good race when you factor in ground loss. But unfortunately, they don't pay off on that. It's good data to know, and it's an interesting... It's interesting data points to, when you're just sort of looking back and evaluating the race. And I think it shows that he actually ran a good race in the context of what transpired, but the early way in which the horse performed compromised where he ended up at the end of the race. And he had to go around a lot of horses, too, because of where he was. I mean, he figured you anyway. He's a big, long, striding horse. You cannot get him stopped. So he knew going in he's going to have to go wide because you can't. He's not the kind of horse you can cut the corner with and take a chance and hope he can knife through traffic and angle out. I mean, that's just not who a horse with that kind of lumbering stride. That's not what you can't do that in a 15 horse field. You can get away with that in a 6 horse field maybe, but not in that race. And it was too little, too late for Honor AP. I still think he's a very good horse, and I would not give up on him moving forward. I think he's going to get better, and I still think he's one of the top 3-year-olds in the country. Just on that day, he just needed to be better, especially early, and he wasn't.
And, then after that, you look through that field, Jay, and... that's another part of what happened up front with Authentic and with Tis the Law. There really wasn't much behind them. We were speculating, for weeks that, so-and-so might be getting better at the right time. There was a lot of projection going on, but I mean, the three best looking horses coming in were first, second, and fourth.
Right, and that goes to what I was saying at the beginning of the segment with you. I mean, I do think that the defections Derby week of Art Collector and King Guillermo, play into that overall theme. That took away two significant horses, one who I think a lot of people thought could win the race, and another who many people thought was a live horse to, if not win, to also be part of the pace. So those two horses, I don't think it can be overstated the significance of their defections on the depth of that field on race day and how it impacted the early running of the race.
Well, and the other one, and this yesterday, it kind of came up late in the conversation. There's also the matter of Thousand Words at the 11th hour coming out, because he, you would have expected him. I mean, he wasn't necessarily going to be pace pressure, although he did, of course, win the shared belief on the lead. But he certainly was going to be a vanguard presence, and you lose him too.
Yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't put him in the same, envelope as Art Collector and King Guillermo. I don't think he has that
sure.
kind of
That's fair.
Speed. I mean, he'd have been in the front half of the field, maybe, but I don't think he would have impacted the pace like Art Collector and King Guillermo. And, you know, Art Collector, we know, likes to be formerly placed on the lead. King Guillermo, too. And I really thought King Guillermo was the most likely horse to give Authentic a run for the money early because of where King Guillermo was drawn. He was drawn in post six, and he was going to have to go from there to avoid having horses fold over on him. And I really think that, you know, I really think those two horses, their defections helped. You know, it was just like we were just talking about, all the different elements when you add a little piece here and a little piece here and a little piece there, what's the difference between Authentic winning the race and Tis the Law winning the race? That was part of it.
Well, and on that topic, too, you know, the unfortunate circumstances surrounding Jimmy, and you could see, you know, post-race, Jimmy Barnes' absence, you know, Baffert was inches from breaking down, frankly, and we talked to him yesterday, and Jimmy's going to have surgery to repair the wrist. He's been in harm's way a couple of times here in the last few years between the pelvis and now this. But, you know, Jay, one last thing, too. I referenced War Emblem, and, you know, I'm sure at some point when Baffert's done, they'll, you know, look back at all the, you know, the Baffert Derby wins. And the War Emblem one, to me, is really relatable. And somebody tweeted on Friday after the scratches had become, you know, the horses became clear that couldn't make the race. And they said, I'm getting a War Emblem vibe. And, you know, we think back to Buddha coming out, and next thing you knew, War Emblem was on a loose lead. And so Baffert has won at least two of his derbies this way.
Right. I mean, I think War Emblem was a little different because I just don't think people took that horse seriously. I think people took Authentic seriously as a horse. I think a lot of them, or those who were against him, like me, thought that just that extra furlong was going to be his undoing and were too right. stubborn to, you know, reevaluate what was unfolding the week of the race regarding the pace. And I think, I do think that's part of what happened with War Emblem as well, but I don't think War Emblem was held in the regard. I mean, Authentic was 4 for 5 coming into the race, had won the Haskell, and the only horse who had ever finished in front of him was Honor AP. I mean, he had a very strong resume.
Yeah,
the War Emblems wasn't quite up to that, even though he had won the, you know, the Illinois Derby in his last race going into the Kentucky Derby. But he was, I think, rightly perceived as a long shot, and I don't know that it was perceived that he couldn't get the distance, like, was the biggest knock, I think, on Authentic. I think with War Emblem, it was like, well, is this horse really that good?
Yeah.
You know, even though he had a freaky Beyer figure, I mean, his fig in the Illinois Derby was, you know, Andy Beyer to this day will say that's one of the ones that, as far as he's concerned, that's one that got away. Because the horse had a giant fig, and Andy, you know, in his way of evaluating a race, just like me looking at Authentic, we both, in those respective ways, were too stubborn to reevaluate what was staring us in the face as the race drew closer.
Well, before we talk about the rest of the weekend and some of the other results, a quick Preakness feel, and Marty with a glance ahead already, and it's just so different, you know, with all the things that are different, Jay, it's so strange to not be, like, on our toes for, you know, a fortnight. The fact that we've got, you know, 29 days or whatever now to Preakness, it's very different, but that feels like it's going to be very big. And when I asked for a confirmation yesterday from Baffert, he jumped at it. He said, horses come out great. He said, we're going. They made it. He was even more enthusiastic yesterday than he'd been on Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, because, I mean, obviously the horse benefited by having a pretty good break between the Haskell and the Derby, as compared to, you know, by comparison to Tis the Law. So obviously, you know, obviously Authentic does well with time between races, as we saw as we saw there. But, you know, this isn't an analogous because of, like you were pointing out, it's a four-week gap between the Derby and Preakness this year as two. But, you know, Baffert's five previous Derby winners, you know, prior to Authentic, all came back and won the Preakness, which I think speaks to, you know, the level of fitness that those horses have going into the race. I mean, he trains to win. He doesn't train to be there. Like I said, that work pattern that Authentic had out here at Del Mar was, those were lung-searing works. So it's interesting, though, that right now they say that he's going to go on. There seems to be some debate in the Tisdall Law camp as to him going on. And, you know, with that race 4 weeks after the Derby and then 5 weeks in front of the, you know, Breeders' Cup Classic, it'll be interesting to see if these horses can continue in that kind of form and then for the Preakness and then come back and run against older horses in the Classic and be as effective. You'd think at some point something's got to give. Either you're going to have to pass one or the other, or maybe you're not going to be quite as good by the end of the year as you are right now. So I'll be interested in seeing how this field takes shape as we get closer to Preakness Day and see who really does stay in. And if they do stay in coming out of there, you know, how serious are they going to be for the for the Classic? I mean, Authentic's got a lot of incentive to go for the Classic. There's that bonus that he's alive for now too, don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
of that Monmouth put up. If you win the Haskell, you win the Derby, and you win the Classic. So I think for him, the Classic would be an $8 million race instead of a $7 million race. And, you know, Tis the Law, we were just talking about how maybe coming back on 4 weeks for the first time, maybe he wasn't quite as good. Well, now you're going to do it again for the Preakness? I mean, and if you do, are you going to be, you know, what's that going to take out of you going forward towards the Classic? So I'm just going to be really interested to see how all this plays out. But there's a number of other horses who are jumping in. I really hope both Art Collector and King Guillermo can make the race. You know, it was unfortunate that they couldn't be in the Derby. I really felt, you know, horrible for both connections of both horses. You know, by and large, both trainers, one of the jockeys and both ownership groups had never been in the Derby before. So hopefully they can get a chance to at least run in the Preakness. And then there's horses like Mystic Guide who won the other day at Saratoga, and Pletcher's horse who won the Tessio, Happy Saver. You know, it's shaping up as a nice race, like you were saying a few minutes ago.
Well, and there's also a couple of others that missed the opportunities for various reasons. Obviously, Thousand Words, but also Cheryl Spite, the Atfield Fipke, and Finnick is hoping to go. Ray Hernandez after their issue, and Pneumatic has been kind of waiting in the
right.
Clubhouse.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Right. Pneumatic is past the Derby to wait for the Preakness, right?
Should be fun.
You know, hopefully it'll be a good, nice field. You know, don't forget, this is sort of the last chance, because there's no Pennsylvania Derby this year, this will be the last chance for three-year-olds to run in a grade one on dirt against three-year-olds only. So that's another reason I think this race has appeal to a number of horses this year that might normally take a pass on it. But I'll just be interested in seeing how some of these ones that you'd think might be top candidates for the Classic as well, how they kind of navigate these next couple months.
We'll keep tabs on that and look forward to a few days down at Pimlico. And, of course, they also announced leading into the weekend that there won't be patrons. But, really the last shoe to fall on that topic feels like Keeneland with whatever decision they and Breeders' Cup are going to make, and it feels like they're waiting as long as possible to make a decision. Jay, before we talk about the end of Del Mar and everything that came with that, let's get any other Derby Oaks weekend. You covered a handful of races, including the Turf Classic, and Here's Chad Brown with this year's model, so to speak, when it comes to the win by Digital Age, who finally had an unencumbered trip and wins the grade one and feels like this year's bricks and mortar.
Yeah, and he's not as accomplished as bricks and mortar, but, you know, there's a lot of similarities in terms of, obviously, it's Chad Brown, it's, you know, it's Seth Klarman. So they won the race for the second year in a row, 16 months apart, with Digital Age, who was his third start of the form cycle off of a lengthy layoff, and obviously, you know, he's certainly on the way up. I think Chad, he ran 1.34 in that race. He's obviously just so well represented in that division, I thought he ran a very good race. For me, Steve, though, the best race of the weekend outside the Derby was the Derby City Distaff, the 7/8 race. There were two fun takeaways for me. Serengeti Empress ran out of her mind again, only this time she just got beat as up. But, you know, if she was going to get beat as up, at least she got beat as up by Neil Pessin, who's, as you know, just one of the all-time greats. And just so happy that he got a grade one win. He's done a tremendous job with Bell's the One. And I'm sure he dined well that night. So I was very, very happy for him. But that was a great race to watch because, you know, Serengeti Empress ran just too good to lose, and I thought it might be a dead heat when they hit the wire. It was so close. It was just that was for me the most enjoyable race, bar the Derby.
We're going to talk to Neil later. In fact, he's going to join us this morning, and we'll talk about Bell's the One, his first grade one win. There's a lot of that going on, first grade one wins. Some other notable things to touch on, Jay. Michael McCarthy came to town with, what seemed like real legit shots, and had one horse kind of maybe underperform a little bit, CC, and then got kind of the Johnny. I'm sure Johnny V would love to have that ride back on Smooth Like Straight, and then of course there was Rushy, who made the right choice running in the Pat Day Mile. Not a lot of people have talked about the Pat Day coming out of the weekend, but certainly one of those things you feel good about afterward when you decide to divert from a race like Derby.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see people who, put their horses' interests ahead of their own self-interests. And, we see time and again the Derby every year where people let their egos get in the way of what should be sound management of horses, especially lightly raced horses who have never even been in a stake before, and end up running. And then you see people who do the right thing, like what happened with Rushy. And I give the owners of that horse a lot of credit for looking at the landscape, saying, no, this is the best interest of this horse right now is to not run a mile and a quarter against the best in the division. It's to run in a one-turn mile and let him continue to progress. And so I like seeing people get rewarded for doing that. You've got to put your horse's interest instead of your own, in front of your own ego. And I was really glad to see it play out that way for Team Rushy.
Because we, of course, will be on our way toward Derby 2021. Thoughts about Dale? Joined us yesterday to talk about his sweep of the juvenile races and that sitting on go. Dale was anxious to, get him to go a route, and that was a quality performance. Came back with a solid fig. Obviously the 2-year-old yesterday, particularly at Saratoga, Jackie's Warrior, it was stunning. Thought about the juvenile race, the Iroquois.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I know you refer to it as a distance, but it was a one-turn mile this year,
right,
as opposed to being a two-turn race. So it's a little bit of a different Iroquois from years past, and it's a long way off. I thought the race shape really helped that horse, so I'll just be interested in seeing if he's as effective going two turns, but it was obviously a good performance. I thought the race really set up for him, though, and it was the kind of race where a one-run closer could be effective. I'm not saying that's what he is, but if that is what he is, he got a made-to-order race on Saturday.
Just looking up and down, sharing back and from Ascot, and picks up where she leaves off. What a nice horse she is. The classic division, Jay, for a second. Brett Calhoun joined us. What a weekend, though, for Chester Thomas. By my standards, wins that Ali Sheba, and then he's rewarded with a placement in the Derby with the aforementioned Mr. Big News. But that, by my standards, is just kind of plucking along here and really not getting the, I think, the dap that he deserves.
I agree. I mean, I wrote about that in my recap of the race. And, you know, when I was on your show last week, I was telling you how I really thought there was a cloud over McKenzie. It just didn't – I thought there was a chance. He's just not what he used to be. He had run, what, four times or three times, I mean, going into that race, and he'd underperformed in two of them pretty badly. You know, and the one win he had was against a kind of a subpar field in the Triple Bend. So it was, I think there were some real questions over where he was at going into that race, whereas by my standards, I mean, his only two losses this year were to Tom Sittad and Improbable, who are, you know, and he finished second to them. And now he's got four wins. He had three coming into the race on the year. So he's got four wins and 2 seconds, and the two horses who beat him are Improbable and Tom Sittad. He's a serious horse, and he trains like a serious horse. I mean, he's an impressive galloper, and you know, he adds to what looks like is a very, very strong potential Breeders' Cup Classic field this year when you have him and Improbable and Tom Sittad and Maximum Security and, you know, et cetera. And float in some three-year-olds who hopefully will move on to that. It's shaping up as a heck of a race.
And, of course, we already knew and know that the distaff and so forth, it's all coming together. It's going to be a nice fall. And, Jay, let's shift gears from Derby Watch and Derby Postscript toward Del Mar. And, you know, the end of the Del Mar meet is always fun because there's those turf races that culminate, you know, the program and the two-year-old program culminates. And, you know, I know that there were some lulls here and there over the summer, but I thought, you know, these last 4 days of Del Mar finished well.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, there were some good, obviously, like you said, some really good stakes racing. It was just so strange to be out there all summer, as I'm sure it was at Saratoga. It's always just such a festive atmosphere, and just to, you know, to be there this whole summer was just so, it was so eerie and weird. It was like just being on a TV soundstage or something like that. Even just walking out of there last night, it just didn't even feel the same as you do on a usual closing day. But the overriding attitude that we had here, and I would imagine at most every place where there's been racing, is at least we're racing, because there's a lot of businesses that aren't able to function at even close to what racing's been able to in most cases. So, and then, like you said, the closing weekend was highlighted by some of the grass racing, like there were the juvenile races on the grass. It was the Del Mar Derby, and then you had, you know, the two grade ones are the debutante and the futurity. And you know, hats off to Louis Mendez for winning yesterday with Dr. Scheibel and you know, Mark Klatt, who convinced the ownership group to purchase the horse, and the horse is going to go to Mark now, and he'll guide his career from this point forward. It's a nice hit for the Cohens because, you know, they put up some money to get this horse, and they got an immediate return on investment with the win yesterday, and obviously residual value by him now being a Grade One winning Son of Violence. So those races were fun. And, you know, Princess Nora on Sunday was, you know, was just such a strange race because, you know, the start of the race was a complete mess. But she was brilliant in terms of her performance. You know, breezing to the wire again, just like she did 15 days earlier in her maiden win. I mean, she's she's the best two-year-old filly in the country, and I'm really eager to see her stretch out. And it's going to be interesting to see what she does for a prep, because if she were to stay here and run in the Chandelier, she's going to have to come back in 20 days, and the horse who won yesterday, the horses yesterday would have to come back in 19 days, because the way the Santa Anita set up their stake schedule, the first part of the meet is just kind of odd and nonsensical to me. You've got, you know, short comebacks for those horses, and then, you know, when you look at where those races were for that division at Del Mar and where the Breeders' Cup is, you know, to make those horses come back in 3 weeks or less and then have 6 weeks to the Breeders' Cup makes no sense when you see what the spacing is for, you know, for instance, horses that are going in the Classic, from the Pacific Classic to the Awesome Again, and the Awesome Again on to the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's shrewder spacing. And I don't know why those two-year-old races this year weren't moved back a week. I think you're really in jeopardy of having some of these horses end up having to leave town to get better spacing and not be jammed back again. Mm. So I'm going to be interested in seeing how these horses are managed out here, but I think there was a real lack of foresight for this year because of the way where the calendar is in terms of Labor Day was the absolute latest it could be this year, and the Breeders' Cup is later than it usually is, you know, being on November 6th and 7th. So, you know, to have that big blockbuster weekend, it makes sense for a race like the Awesome Again. It doesn't for the Chandelier and the Front Runner, or not the Front Runner. It's now the American Pharoah.
Right. On that topic, any of the maiden performances, I was kind of back and forth with Gary Barber, and he was certainly thrilled after he had a great weekend in general, but the win by Superman Shaq was visually impressive.
Very much so. I mean, he's a horse that I had mentioned in my pre-meet story on two-year-olds to watch. I don't know what happened to him. I haven't asked Peter Miller yet as to what went on in that horse's debut, but he just stopped. But it was interesting that Pratt rode him back, and then he ran like you would have thought he would have first time out, but in his second start. So I don't know what went awry in his debut, but whatever it was, it got corrected and corrected quickly. And he ran back to what you would have thought he would have done first time out in his second start.
Well, and you know, the weekend for Gary Barber included the spinaway win by Vequist and the Nyquist daughter, and we're going to talk to Butchie Reed, and Butchie also sent out Monday morning QB here days before the start of the NFL season, and Monday morning QB hadn't been seen, I think, since the Withers, and he ran a good second, actually, to Baffert, to Happy Saver. So we'll talk to Butch as well. And I guess that's the...
Happy Saver is Fletcher, by the way.
Happy Saver, yeah.
Yeah.
I said second to the Fletcher.
Right, yeah, Fletcher. That's okay, go ahead. When you listen back to your show, go ahead. It's all good, right. Move on.
I'm thumbing through the rest of the stuff that, you know, there was the turf races. I don't know if you had a chance to listen. I know we got to you early this morning, but we had Umberto Rispoli and Flavian Pratt together in Derek Lawson's car at the airport. And there was no fighting. There was no brawling. They decided it on the racetrack yesterday, but. I did get a Twitter question, Jay, you know, with the two of them heading out of town, and I don't think there's going to be any issue about them returning, because when does racing resume?
On the 19th. So, you know, not for a week from Saturday is when Santa Anita's fall meeting starts up. But as far as I know, Santa Anita's going to have the same kind of protocols for jockeys that they did during the summer when we resumed racing after the pause, where they're going to have to, you know, be tested ahead of time. So there's no problem with them leaving, because regardless, they're going to have to be tested before they ride anew here anyway.
Okay.
You know, as far as I know, that's what's going to be, the protocols in place here. I mean, Santa Anita's had, you know, for jockeys, they had a pretty strict, qualifications, and you know, it worked. I mean, they had a good situation going on there after the pause.
Well, and the last day of racing at the Kentucky Downs meet. In fact, I was talking to Hammer last night, and the meet is much more compact than it has been in years past. The 6 days, and their last day will be Wednesday the 16th. And then, of course, New York also taking the same kind. It's nice, actually, frankly, to have a little bit of a chance to catch our breath, and certainly after this crazy weekend that was laid out. Jay, other than that, I think we hit all the highlights.
I hope so, and if we didn't, you will have other people on the rest of today and the rest of the week that will fill in the blanks, I'm sure.
Outstanding. Well, and Jay, thanks for a fabulous, as always, you and Marty pairing up for the Derby Watch coverage and making the necessary adjustments under the strangest circumstances ever. And then you get a result that ends up being, you know, involving guys that have won 6 derbies now, and a rider that's won 3, and I can't even count how many. I was speculating yesterday how many Ron Anderson has won as a jock agent.
I think 5.
I think that's. I wasn't sure if it was 5 or 6 himself.
Two with Stevens, one with Antley, one with Rosario, and one with Johnny V, I think, is the tally.
And he didn't have Bailey?
Thundergulch, Silver Charm, Charismatic, Orb, and this horse, I think, is the tally for Ron Anderson.
Unbelievable.
He had a pretty good weekend. He won the Derby, and then he finishes off Saratoga with the hopeful win with Joel on Jackie's Warrior.
Yep. Yeah, and that, and
that's why he's the man who runs racing.
That's I'm glad I had the conversation we did with him last week on air. Actually, that was very valuable, because he went through a few of the performances. Jay Privman, everybody, DRF Privman, and Jay, it's a little different. Nice to get to be able to kind of unwind a little bit out of Derby instead of having to just quickly, turn toward Baltimore. So enjoy the post Labor Day lull.
And you as well, and I'll look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks.
You got it. Jay Privman, everybody. And we thank Jay for just all the coverage, because we were through tons by Jay, whether it was, particularly these last weeks leading up to Derby. There was the Derby coverage, and then there was the Del Mar coverage. Next half hour, got a couple of minutes here before we take a little interlude and another summer, a little more summer music. Goodbye to summer music. And then last hour, give you the lineup. We're going to hear from Neil Pessin and from Butchie Reed, and looking forward to talking to both. How much I appreciate when, some of the outfits that, don't have dozens and dozens of horses. For Butch Reed, Butchie, whenever he gets his hands on a nice horse, the cream rises to the top. And Vequist, to break her maiden in the Grade One Spinaway, that was impressive. And by the way, speaking of Equist, Sunday, that was also the last of our, I haven't seen the numbers, but that was the last of the Beat Bic qualifiers. So as soon as I get the numbers from Holly Short and from Michelle Ravencraft, we'll get the lineup, the number of participants in the finals for a seat in Vegas. And I was happy to end with a win. I had the toughest beat pick season. And you know, it's funny because Vikqvist was, you know, was really, that's the kind of horse I pick virtually every week. I'm looking for, you know, a horse that's a mid-priced long shot. I that's just my approach, you know, day in, day out when I play. And I thought there were real questions about the Cassie filly, you know, after the issue was that the Adirondack? Yeah, I think. So I wanted somebody different anyway. And, you know, Vikqvist was competitive on paper. Plus, you got Luis Saez. What was going to be wrong the way Luis Saez has been booting him home? And she was as dominant winning this as Jackie's Warrior was winning the Hopeful. Tremendous. So Vikqvist almost 7-1 was 6-1 morning line. We got 15-20. So I hope for those of you that played with me, and I don't know, maybe, you know, I think I only, what, I had three winners this season out of, what do we have, 16? We had 8 weeks? 8 weeks, I think. So went 3-16 with a lot of thirds. I just a ton of thirds. But congratulations to everybody that qualified, and we'll have later in the week, once we get draws, we'll have the lineup for the finals. All right, and I'll get you those numbers. And I know, you know, it's been a good season again. Basically same. I think a similar field assembled. Couple other things. This is nice and leisurely for a change. We talked about Kentucky Downs. Let me give you a couple of things. I don't think we'll get to some of the smaller stakes from the weekend, but I can't miss the opportunity. Here we go. I can't bypass the opportunity to congratulate Pink Lloyd. I mean it is amazing. It's scary how good he is. 8 years old, he wins the Vigil. Just astounding. He's a machine. Wins by a length, and actually it was 90 cents. In fact, you know, looking at his numbers. See something now that I bring that up. Yeah, he was 3-5 in the Bold Venture. He was 2-5 in the Shepperton. 1-4 in the Jacques Cartier. 75 cents in the Kendi Road. There was the non-starter going back to September. And yeah, you got to go back to spring of last year and winter of 18. To find him that close to or above even money. He was in the Jacques Cartier in 19. He was 2-1 as the favorite. And that's as high as there is on the page. So the 90 cents, 380. 380, pretty attractive price on Pink Lloyd on Saturday. Amazing. Bob Tiller and Cassie Barber second there with Olympic Runner, with Cass Kimura, Mike Keogh, and the Chicken Dan's Estate, and Don Howard third with City Boy. So that was your Vigil. Monmouth, you know, I gotta hopefully catch up. It might be tough this week with the sale. I've got to catch up with Chad and kind of summarize the summer. He had a very good summer. You know, while Saturday at Churchill was winning the Turf Classic, analyze it. Comes back and had been away since November of 18 himself, going back to the Breeders' Cup Mile. You know, when Expert Eye and Catapult just got past him. But healthy and back competitive and wins first time back off nearly a two-year layoff, wins the Red Bank at Monmouth. And they also ran the two-year-old races, two historic races, the Sapling and the Sorority. They both went for six figures, actually, $100,000. And Anthony Ferrier, the Calumet-bred Oxbow gelding, waist deep, wins well. Went off as just favored over Pickin' Time for Kelly Breen. Super C Racing and John Huber own waist deep. Oxbow out of a Tappet mare. And coming out of the juvenile try at Ellis Park behind Pico Doro and company. Drew the rail and George Vargas gets him around. And we had talked to Stidham about Tapwood, who ran kind of evenly. Ended up third in there. Just didn't really. It was sitting, you know, behind waist deep and kind of probed a couple of times, but then, never really. In fact, even got overhauled and ended up beating a half a dozen or so. The Sorority yesterday. That was on Sunday. The Sorority yesterday into Mischief Philly of the Generazios. Unbelievable. They you want to talk about machines? They are just churning out horses. It's unbelievable. And this Into Mischief Philly, homebred out of the Trippy Mare, just living a dream. Christophe Clément. And when Chris is on, he'll say, well, she's a very nice filly. Mischievous Dream, who we saw on the Bolton Landing, and she stretches out. She'd broken her maiden right at the beginning of the meet, opening day, actually, and came back, tried the Bolton Landing, couldn't get to the very impressive Toby's Heart or Joy's Rocket, and ended up fourth, beaten five. And this is a nice performance, nice win. Mischievous Dream. Invincible Gal, a good second in here for Grand Motion. For that Mike Ryan, Jeff Drown, Team Hanley filly. Invincible Gal, who we also saw at Saratoga break her maiden at the beginning of August. And she ended up just beat here. They came rallying. I mean, it's funny, the pace was not fast, and yet all the closers, mid-pack and deep closers, came running in here. But Joe Bravo aboard. This is a New York bred, actually, that wins the Sorority. So there's your Monmouth weekend, and analyze it, and waist deep in the Sapling. Mischievous Dream in the Sorority. And Frank, the season for Frank is over. He's going back to California. And another nice summer for Frank Miramati in the booth at Oceanport. And one more quick stake review before we take a little music break. And the Smile, going back historically, of course, part of the Summit of Speed. And Gulfstream kind of broke up the Summit of Speed races, and they've been running them here every couple of weeks. And the Smile, Terry Pompey. Nice to see Terry Pompey win the graded stake. Louis Reyes aboard. Cool Arrow, another Into Mischief, bred by Mr. Poindexter out of Iowa. I mean, the Kentucky bred, but Alan Poindexter bred this one out of Phoenicia, a Mr. Purple mare, and the six-year-old Cool Arrow that Pompey, this is a former... this is a horse that was taken from Terry Pompey by Chris Oakes and Mac Nickel for one start. And then Terry and the My Purple Haze team took the horse back. This is a six-year-old gelding. Think about this. And was brought back for 62.5. They lost him for $62,000, and then that was in December of last year. And then as soon as the horse ran back in February for $62,500, they scooped him back up, and he's won three in a row including the open lead before winning the Smile. So what a savvy maneuver. We haven't talked to Terry in too long. And, of course, you know, she also had a health scare a couple of years ago and heart issue and knock on wood. Terry Pompei, good for her. And so there's your... Here's your miscellaneous steak roundup. And before we take a break and reach for Neil Pessin and Butchie Reed, let me also give you, because we had that conversation yesterday about Philly and that full slate yesterday, the Pennsylvania Day at the Races. And they had a nice card. They did $1.5 million, too. So they attracted some business. And from the stake standpoint, quick rundown, the Stormcat, Wait For It, for Eddie Coletti. And Eddie, of course, heavily involved with the Uptown Charlie Brown team. And they also were prominent. They took the banjo picker, Midnight Charlie Brown first and Midnight Charlie second as the 4-5 entry. But Eddie also, for the same, you know, for the Uptown Charlie Brown stud group, Wait For It, wire to wire, at 3-2, beating Someday Jones, the very hard hitting, consistent mainline and Alexandria Stables, standard bearer, the 7-year old. But don't feel bad. Don't feel bad for Will Schwartz, because the kidnapped, maiden try was successful. Won well at 4-5 with Pennington, and of course John Service trains, and Will owns this one himself, and bred this one out of Bye Bye Baby. This is a violent gelding, and I know Will is really excited about the prospects for Kidnapped, and we'll have to get the name. Bye Bye Baby, I guess. Violence. We'll get some of the details from Will next time we talk to him about the backstory of the name. So those were the first two stakes. The Mrs. Penny, It's a Journey, beat Puka Penny on the money, on the wire. Puka Penny ran very well as the second choice and just gets, Manny Sanchez just gets up for Jamie Ness. And Gap View Racing and Jaeger Inc. And there was so we couldn't have Puka Penny win the Mrs. Penny in the Dr. Garofalo in the Memorial Pink Caddy with Sanchez for Randy Allen and Clubber Stable and Greg Quick own, and Pink Caddy went off as the second choice. And won, you know, pretty clear. And then in the Marshall Jenny. Critical Weight drew in off the AE list. Did you, if you were paying attention, the Tisway Gelding, bred by Blackstone Farm and owned by Monster Racing, for Jose Delgado, and the 6-year-old Critical Way, wire to wire, and just set a pretty quick pace, but nobody really was getting to Critical Way, and this was a. There was an injury in here involving a seagull or something. There was either a seagull or a seagull, I think. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. So it was a good day for Pennsylvania breds, as long as you weren't on. You know, on the wing, it was good for 4-legged Pennsylvania breds, not for 2-winged Pennsylvania breds. Well, a lot of sadness involved with the summer ending, and so can't miss the opportunity to hear from Lana Del Rey. 2 hours in the book, hour 3. When we come back, visits with Butchie Reed and Neil Pessin and Nicole Russo to preview tomorrow's first day of. Phasig tipped in Summertime Sadness, Little Lana. Like a snare, honey.
hot summertime. Like a snail, honey, I'm on fire. I feel it everywhere, nothing's scary.